Hello, I'm Andrew Davis, Music Director of Lyric Opera of Chicago, and today I'd like to tell you about Gioachino Rossini's delightful two-act opera, La Cenerentola, or Cinderella. And I'd also like to tell you a few things about the genius who created it. According to opera lore, Rossini liked to compose in bed. Occasionally he'd drop a sheet of completed manuscript on the floor. Rather than throw back the covers and get out of bed to retrieve it, he'd simply compose a new page. If you've never listened to Rossini's music, the composing in bed story sounds far-fetched. But if you listen to only a few bars of La Cenerentola, you'll come away with the sense that for Rossini, composing was second nature, and for him, writing a page of music or two was indeed easier than climbing out of a warm bed. When Rossini was born in 1792, he came into a family of performing musicians. His father, Giuseppe Rossini, was a trumpeter and horn player, who was infected with the revolutionary fervour that swept through Italy at the time. Brimming with strong political opinions, Rossini's father often tangled with the authorities, who removed him from his posts of town trumpeter and inspector of public slaughterhouses. More than once he wound up in prison. When he wasn't occupying a jail cell, he could be found in an opera pit. Rossini's mother was a singer who had received little in the way of formal training, but had a good ear, was attractive, and had a confident stage manner. She worked as the seconda and sometimes the prima donna soprano in several local houses. The income was needed since husband Giuseppe, with his string of incarcerations, was at best an intermittent breadwinner. The family moved around, with the father playing horn in various opera orchestras while Rossini's mother performed on stage. The young Rossini had anything but a normal childhood, but he did see and hear a good deal of opera during those years. Rossini was a difficult child. Largely unsupervised, he was considered wild by most standards. He received somewhat of an education, reading, writing, Latin, mathematics, and decorative handwriting. He was twice apprenticed to a blacksmith and once to a hog butcher. Fortunately for opera lovers, neither blacksmithing nor hog butchering suited him. Each time his apprenticeship was terminated. In 1801, Giuseppe Rossini was appointed professor of horn by the Bologna Academy, where his son studied with him. By the time the boy was 10, he had developed a pleasing soprano voice and often sang in church. At 12, he made his operatic debut, singing a small part in a long-forgotten opera in Bologna. By that time, Rossini had composed several songs and opera arias and could play the harpsichord, horn, and viola. In 1806, he entered the Liceo Musicale, where he studied singing, cello, piano, and counterpoint under the school's director, Padre Stanislao Mattei, a teacher rigid in his approach to music and a stickler for textbook rules. But more important than his instructor or his course of study was the fact that the young Rossini now had access to a library containing thousands of musical scores. It was there that Rossini pored over the music of Haydn and Mozart. He often referred to Mozart as my idol and my master. Of course, Rossini's early detractors insisted that he was too German. But those objections are swept away by his music, catchy tunes, florid arias, and colourful orchestration. The undeniable fact is that Rossini sounds Italian. But the influence of both Haydn and Mozart can't be denied either. More than one historian has floated the theory that it was Mozart and Haydn who were Rossini's real teachers in Bologna, not the uptight Mattei. You'll hear some of Mozart and Haydn's influence in La Cenerentola. But most of all, you'll hear an opera that is a flawless coupling of a delightful story full of extraordinary human characters with music that's bursting with energy, joy, and an unbridled sense of spontaneity. Pure Rossini. The libretto was written by Jacopo Ferretti, based on the fairy tale Cendrillon by Charles Perrault. The opera was first performed in Rome's Teatro Valle on the 25th of January 1817. The Cinderella story is one of the oldest of all fairy tales. It exists in different cultures with different variations. The most familiar is the version that you probably know already, thanks to Walt Disney. Cruel stepmother, fairy godmother, pumpkin coach that's drawn by mice, glass slipper, and there's a fair amount of magic and a good deal of romantic fantasy. This is not the version that Rossini used. Librettist Ferretti gave him a libretto void of abracadabra. There's no fairy godmother, no mice employed as draft animals, there's not even a glass slipper. Ferretti's Cinderella story is a masculine one. Instead of a wicked stepmother, there's Don Magnifico, a wicked stepfather. Instead of a fairy godmother, there's Alidoro, who's a philosopher and a tutor for the prince. And the glass slipper has been replaced by a bracelet. The story goes this way. Cinderella works night and day as a maid in the house of her stepfather, Don Magnifico. Magnifico is completely broke. His house is in disrepair, and his only hope for financial salvation is for one of his daughters to land a man who will make things right for Don Magnifico. Unfortunately, the daughters, Clorinda and Tisbe, are mean, petulant young women who spend their days preening and devising ways to make their stepsister Cinderella's life more difficult. The opera begins with the two of them flitting about, trying on gowns and jewellery, while Cinderella tends the fire. She sings a ballad about a king who found his wife among the common folk. Una volta c'era un re, or Once Upon a Time There Was a King, is a simple enough aria, but in it Rossini immediately conveys the deep feelings and yearnings of Cinderella. She sings of a king who was bored with being alone. The king finds three possible brides, and as the song goes, he scorns pomp and beauty, and in the end he chooses for himself innocence and goodness. I should mention that the recording we're excerpting has Jennifer Larmour as Cinderella, Raúl Jiménez as Don Ramiro, Gina Quilico as Dandini, Alessandro Corbelli as Don Magnifico, Alistair Miles as Alidoro. The two stepsisters, Clorinda and Tisbe, are Adalina Scarabelli and Laura Polverelli. The orchestra of the Royal Opera House and the Covent Garden Opera Chorus are conducted by Carlo Rizzi. A beggar comes to the door. But in this opera, nothing's as it seems. The beggar is actually Alidoro, the prince's tutor. Thinking he really is a beggar, the two stepsisters want to send him away, but Cinderella gives him some bread and coffee. Soon enough, it's made known, Prince Ramiro is looking for a bride, and he's due to arrive there shortly. He does indeed arrive, but he's not recognised as royalty because he and his valet, Dandini, have temporarily swapped identities. The idea is for the prince freely to check out marriageable women without them being aware that royal blood flows through his veins. But the prince, who's now disguised as Dandini, is immediately smitten with Cinderella. The chemistry is mutual. In their first duet, his vocal line is as elegant and graceful as hers. Before things heat up any further, Cinderella is called away by her pesky stepsisters. Don Magnifico awakens from a peculiar dream, which he interprets as a sign that his daughters will become queens. Prince Ramiro, still playing the role of valet, tells Magnifico that the prince, who is really his valet, will arrive shortly. The stepsisters are beside themselves and flirt shamelessly with Dandini, whom they think is the prince. He invites them to a ball at the palace. Don Magnifico tells Cinderella that she can't go to the ball. At this point, Rossini gives us one of his unforgettable quintets. Signor, una parola. Don Magnifico does his best to ignore Cinderella's pleas to have just an hour spent at the ball. And he informs Ramiro and Dandini that the girl is merely kitchen help. At one point, he threatens her with a beating. Alidoro, still in his beggar's clothes, produces a list of eligible women in Don Magnifico's household, and it lists three names, not two. Don Magnifico then announces that the third sister is dead. When Alidoro is alone with Cinderella, he takes off his beggar's clothes and reveals that he is a member of Prince Ramiro's court. Cinderella will go to the ball after all. Here's some of Signora Una Parola. At the palace, Clorinda and Tisbe fight over Dandini, whom they still think is the prince. Dandini suggests that whomever he doesn't marry should consider Ramiro as possible husband material. Neither sister wants any part of marriage to a valet, and they insult Ramiro to his face. An unknown, incredibly beautiful woman in a veil shows up. Don Magnifico and his two daughters sense something is familiar about her, but they don't ascertain that she's Cinderella. While upset over the presence of the mysterious lady, Don Magnifico still hopes Clorinda or Tisbe will hit the jackpot and wind up with the prince. Magnifico spins out an elaborate fantasy of his life on Easy Street when one of his daughters wins the grand prize.
Già mi par che questo è quello, conficcandomi un cantone e cavandosi il cappello, incominci. Signor barone, alla figlia sua regale, porterebbe un memoriale. Prenda per la cioccolata, e una doppia ben coniata, e una doppia ben coniata, faccia intanto scivolar. E una doppia, faccia intanto scivolar. Io rispondo, sì, vedremo, già è di peso, parleremo. Da palazzo può passar, sì, da palazzo può passar. Già è di peso, ci vedremo, da palazzo può passar.
Dandini, still disguised as the prince, flirts a bit with Cinderella, but she tells him that she's in love with his valet. Right answer, lady. The valet steps forward and declares his love for Cinderella. She gives him one of her matching bracelets and sets up a test for him by explaining that if he does indeed love her, he will find the other. Don Magnifico tells Dandini to choose either Clorinda or Tisbe. But then Dandini finally lets him in on the secret that he's not really the prince, he's only the prince's valet. Don Magnifico becomes so upset that Dandini orders him out of the palace. Back at Don Magnifico's house, Cinderella has returned to her duties tending the fire and sweeping floors. Her father and stepsisters return from the ball, all three upset with recent developments. Outside, there's a raging storm. A favourite with Rossini, the barber of Seville has a great one too. Rossini was a consummate melodist, but melody alone is not what distinguishes him from his contemporaries. Remember all those scores he pored over as a student at Liceo Musicale? Rossini uses his orchestra in the same way that Mozart and Haydn did. It was not a simple accompanying mechanism, but an essential component of his operas, supporting the melody and expressing all forms of emotion. Most notable, though, was his use of the orchestra to build tension and excitement. Listen to how Rossini uses the colours of the orchestra in his portrayal of a storm. Dandini appears at the door of Don Magnifico's. Prince Ramiro's carriage has overturned just outside. Either an amazing coincidence or a bit of Dandini's cleverness that librettist Ferretti didn't feel the need to share. Dandini brings the prince inside the house, and Cinderella realizes that the man she loves is really Prince Ramiro, not his valet. The prince recognizes her bracelet, and the couple are reunited. Don Magnifico, Clorinda, and Tisbe are, of course, furious. Angered by their cruelty to Cinderella, Ramiro threatens to punish them, but Cinderella asks him to be merciful. As she leaves with her prince, Alidoro, the puppet master and choreographer of all this, thanks heaven for the happy outcome. At Ramiro's palace, Alidoro warns the stepsisters that they face a lifetime of difficulties if they do not seek Cinderella's mercy. Don Magnifico kneels before her, and she forgives everyone. They all embrace as Cinderella proclaims that her days as a cleaning lady have ended. Rossini composed La Cenerentola when he was only 25. It took him all of 3 weeks. Being on such a tight deadline forced him to borrow from some of his other works, not an uncommon practice for composers of this era. He originally wrote La Cenerentola's overture for his La Gazzetta, an opera buffa that satirized the influence of newspapers on people's lives. By Rossini standards, La Gazzetta was less than successful. But its overture, once attached to La Cenerentola, has achieved musical immortality. Like his overtures to Gazza Ladra, William Tell, and Italian in Algiers, it's often played as a standalone piece on symphony orchestra programmes. Only a year before La Cenerentola, Rossini gave the world The Barber of Seville, an undisputed comic masterpiece, a cultural landmark so famous that it even received a treatment from Bugs Bunny. Rossini wrote 35 operas in the space of two decades. In 1824, he moved to Paris, and in 1829 wrote his massive four-act opera, Guillaume Tell, or William Tell. It would be his last. At the age of 37, he abandoned opera composition, but lived another 39 years. Late in life, Rossini, in a reflective mood, said, "Mozart was the admiration of my youth, the desperation of my mature years, and the consolation of my old age." That quote reveals a lot about Rossini, whose works, like Mozart's, remain living entities, still being performed in all the world's opera houses and still part of all of us who attend and love opera. He died in Paris in 1868. Thousands walked in his funeral procession. Like his hero Mozart, Rossini is still with us, and his music still enchants and delights. The recording excerpted in this commentary is used courtesy of Warner Classics. This commentary script was written by Jack Zimmerman.